we trust. Charge we're not sure about.
Welcome to episode number 59 of In Tech We Trust, a very special Halloween episode. Nigel, take it away.
I'm too scared to take it away now.
Well, isn't this 58 though? Isn't this 58?
Is it? No, it's
no,
not.
59
it's,
no, in the Slack.
59, it's totally 59.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Never mind. So it's Halloween, right? So do we have any favourite Halloween tech? I mean, I've got a couple of gadgets on the desk. I've just had to go and pilfer these. Does pilfer work in the States? Do you know what that means, yeah?
Oh,
yeah.
We know pilfer.
You know pilfer.
We created pilfer.
So the kids upstairs have got a little playroom attached to one of the bedrooms, and they've turned it into a spook alley for a party tomorrow. So I've gone and pilfered a couple of things from their bedroom. Can I just play this music for everybody? I don't know if this one works. Hang on. Whoa. Now, please don't make that noise anymore because it works on a sensor. So I don't know what I'm more scared of, Lauren's voice or the scary face that came out of there. I'm glad I've got the lights on in the office. I'll say that much.
Oh, boy. And it is late where you are. And
it is, yeah.
And how many kids are going to be showing up for this?
Oh, mate. So it was originally going to be a maximum of 30. But you know what it's like when you invite more than, like, let's say, a handful of people? Suddenly, if you don't invite people, it's like, well, why didn't you invite us? So we've got 38 kids coming tomorrow.
Oh, my God. And, oh, my God. You are so dead. You are so dead. You might as well just stay up all night long and dig yourself a grave.
Oh, I know.
Just jump in it.
Yeah. You know. I would if I wasn't too scared.
Do it to freak them out. You know, just walk out of that thing when the 37th one shows up or something.
Well, you know what as well? So we're having the party at like 1 o'clock, and of course it's like still light, well, obviously, at 1 o'clock. So I kind of don't really get it. We're going to be having a few games and things, but for all the scary stuff, it's not even, and you know, this kind of stuff isn't scary when it's light, is it? Like life's totally different when it's dark.
Oh yeah. Do you have any, do you have black cats? And I know you've got a menagerie of animals. Are any of them going to be participating in any way?
No. We've got a load of cows in the field out the back. I'm not sure I could.
Don't think I've ever seen a Halloween cow before.
No, that would be interesting. You know what I did see this week, though, which I think probably a lot of people will have seen? These kind of quadcopter things with, like, ghostly sheets hanging from them, like chasing cars down the street and stuff. Have you seen those things on YouTube and the likes?
Oh, these things are brilliant.
I mean, there's two
aspects of these, right? There's the drone that uses, you know, invisible wire or fishing line or something like that to swing the ghosts around. Then there's the idea of drones inside, you know, your scary thing.
Yeah.
Right. So it kind of looks like a drone and sounds like a drone. I kind of think the ones with the wires are the best.
So I've not seen those, but yeah, they totally sound much better because you can see the drone, at least on the ones I've seen, and you can hear it, like you say. But what, so the drone's, I guess, high up and more difficult to hear, and you just hang something scary down.
Yeah, let me try to look up one of these things now. I'm looking on, I saw a couple of these. If you search on YouTube for epic Halloween prank.
Oh yeah.
The guy who did this is Tom Mabe, M-A-B-E. And he's got a couple of them. You've got to see him. You've got to see him. He's got, you know, like scary creatures with wings flying around in cemeteries scaring kids. And
you know, if there's ever a use for drones, that is it, isn't it?
Oh, kind of brilliant. My balcony's right over my front door where the trick-or-treaters would come, so it'd be fun to just sit up there.
Yeah. You know what? The days of, like, mum and dad with, like, an old bed sheet over them that's, like, totally not convincing are gone. The Halloween pranks of the future, man, brilliant.
Yeah, we're gonna have drones, and you know, I still like smoke machines. You know, I'm sure I'll live a year less after breathing the fumes of the the gas or whatever. Have you guys ever used that stuff?
No.
The original vaping, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, vaping. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe I should just, like, light up a bunch of cigars tomorrow night for kids to buy. Just
Yeah. Wow. Talk about the old curmudgeon. Just
there you go.
Cigar scent emanating from your house.
Yeah. Well, we have a pretty good mannequin here at Tejal that is dressed up as new hire training, and it does look like he's being tortured to smithereens. It's pretty bloody and awful. So I kind of like that as a Halloween theme. New hire. I mean, most of the Halloween tech is real low tech, right? The kinds of things you wind up, mm-hmm. you know, like I once had a wind up skull that would chatter. You know, I always wanted to turn it into a hood ornament for my car, and I never did, but I always wanted that. So
we've got a couple of almost life-size skeletons, and my oldest daughter put one on my wife's side of the bed just the other night. But I figured she wasn't going to turn the light on when she came to bed. She was up later than me doing stuff. So I kind of hung it, sat over the toilet in the ensuite bathroom. And she came to bed like a bunch of time later than me, but I heard her when she went in there. I mean, she wasn't scared by her or anything, but she was like, "Ooh!" Yeah. So,
was that a good ooh or a bad ooh?
I don't know. It wasn't a scared ooh. But you know what you're saying about all the low tech kind of Halloween stuff. I tell you what's really difficult to beat is just good old fake blood. Is difficult to beat. I think
it's hard to beat fake blood. One thing that really, really works is a chainsaw. I mean, you're out in the country.
Just a real chainsaw. Yeah.
Someone comes to the door, just fire one up.
Yeah.
In like a William Shatner mask.
Yeah. But I do have hedge cutters, electric hedge cutters off of a lithium-ion battery. They could do it, couldn't they?
They would do it. I mean, you know, hedge trimmers, if you have to use a weed whacker, do that. I mean, just something.
I mean, a meat carver, yeah.
Ooh, yeah, meat carver, that's good. Yeah. Having real knife, I mean, that's kind of close to a real knife, though.
And a chainsaw, though.
Well, it's not. You don't want to drop that thing, do you? Good grief.
Oh, I suppose
the chainsaw's really not going to do much damage.
I suppose this is where I have to give a disclaimer and say that I work for a chainsaw company, too. I was trying to do something for Halloween this year that didn't work out. Failed thing. I was making a pumpkin pie spice beer. I thought it was going to happen. I had a preliminary bottle that I tasted. Instead of going to secondary fermentation, I bottled one, and it came out much better than it tasted, you know, after the primary fermentation. But I cracked a bottle last night. It's been bottled now for a couple of weeks. No carbonation, and it just kind of has, I don't know how to say this. It's got like kind of a green slime feel to it. Not the flavor, not the taste, but the texture is a little bit like lizard guts.
Oh, nice.
I know.
Halloween.
Could feed it to the kids as lizard guts, but I suppose the alcohol content wouldn't be great for that, would it? Yeah, best not.
Yeah. Could just have them dip their fingers in.
Yeah.
You
know, that's another one that's always a great Halloween thing. Dip your hands into like goo and stuff and figure out what it is, blindfolded, stuff like that. They're classics.
That's good stuff. Yeah. You mean you do that in the UK too?
Yeah, we do that in the UK too. We've got one of our friends who's got her kids coming. She's doing a little, she's got a little rig going that's got that as her thing. Yeah.
I am surprised being in Japan, you know, all of the Halloween stuff going on here. We were in Shibuya, the Shibuya district, last night, and there were mummy costumes everywhere and, you know, slutty nurses and slutty zombies.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty much like America, basically. So.
Now, would you say based on what you've seen that you've seen more or less slutty?
Compared to America, or
yeah. Well, maybe just your slice of it, your neighborhood
in Indiana. I would say it's probably about the same. Based on my college experiences several years ago, and I would say,
very diplomatic answer.
Yeah. It translates.
Yeah, that was not a good question at all, was it?
I was wondering how she's going to deal with that. Anyway, so Lauren, you are over in Japan for OpenStack Summit, yeah? Have you had a chance to see any of it yet?
Trying to change the topic now, Nigel?
Record scratch. play that music again, Nigel.
Oh, where is it?
There it is.
Anyway.
Toccata et fugue.
Yeah. Is it Bach, is it?
It is, yeah, Bach.
There you go. Classy, eh?
Yep.
So, yeah, I really didn't get to see much of OpenStack. I'm here with the V Brownbag crew, so we recorded about 76 tech talks, and couldn't tell you what one of them was about, except for maybe the one I gave, and barely that. But yeah, it's been interesting. Actually, there were a ton of HP Helion tech talks, which was, I guess, a little surprising given our conversation last week about HP Helion and it shutting down.
Yeah, isn't it dying of death?
So apparently, I was talking to a few folks about this because I thought it was just a public cloud offering, and they are, in fact, shutting down or sunsetting the public cloud offering, but there is still... There are like four different services that they offer: managed on-site, managed off-site, et cetera, et cetera. So the private cloud portion or hybrid apparently is still alive. And there's a blog saying that they are doubling down their efforts on that. That's really why they're shutting down the public part, because they want to double down their efforts on the hybrid and private part.
It's like a proper Halloween thing, that really, isn't it? I mean, there's got to be not a lot of life in that, I don't think. You see what I'm trying to do there? Yeah, that's pretty weak, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but we could talk about it as Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah.
And besides, after the last time we ripped HP, you know, Calvin said that we were dead. He said we were dead to him.
Yeah, the ripcast that he called it.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, so, I mean, what are they talking about, Lauren? Private and hybrid? So they want to sell technology and help customers implement private, but I mean, hybrid at this point, I think, has got to be just total Frankenstein nonsense.
Well, and I think the hybrid that they're speaking of is probably some other, you know, AWS or some other OpenStack implementation, something like that. I don't think they're talking about their own version of a public, you know, so they'd be the private part.
Yeah, so they do the private part, and they what, make it easy for you to ramp onto Amazon and Microsoft Azure, and maybe we'll talk about this in a second, but Oracle Cloud. I mean, I can't see them being overly keen to do any of those, really.
Yeah, and I don't have the, you know, exactly what they're planning as far as the hybrid part goes. I don't know that for sure, so no one should quote me on this. No. But I mean, everything is still OpenStack oriented, including their private cloud offering. So I imagine any other OpenStack public offering would be easier to go to in a hybrid situation. But again, that's just conjecture on my part.
Fair enough. Hey, is there a big HP presence out there?
There is, yeah. They're actually a big sponsor, HP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're gold or whatever their top sponsorship is. HP, Scality, Cisco, and I'm forgetting.
Maybe
one
IBM,
or
I don't know.
I don't think so. It wasn't a huge, I don't know, sponsorship, I guess.
No, it's just because we did talk last week briefly, didn't we, saying that, you know, what might the knock-on effect be to OpenStack here? But it seems like, what, their private Helion cloud is still based on OpenStack anyway, and they're still over in Japan en masse, yeah?
Yes, very much so. I mean, at least based on the tech talks, you know, I mean, they had several each day from an HP person with the HP Helion logo up in some corner, you know?
Oh, well. Feel like I need to play this again? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I guess they had all the signs made already, so they might as well.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You don't want to waste those.
Marketing hasn't had time to make a new deck.
Good grief. Hey, I did see in the news as well, so kind of still on cloud, it's been Oracle Open World, which is one of the, well, if not the biggest tech show going, isn't it, there in San Francisco. Anyway, so I did read a piece in on the Register saying, you know, 7 years after Larry Ellison said, cloud doesn't really exist, nothing's going to change for Oracle, it's going to have no impact on them. And I actually do remember him saying that, you know, I didn't realize it was that long ago, to be fair. But all the noises coming out of Oracle Open World are they are a cloud company now. So, and they're saying that I think what they're doing is putting two and two together and getting a kind of weird, funky number. So what they're saying is that they reckon within 10 years, 80% of production apps are going to be out in the cloud. And I don't know where they get that number from or anything, right? But then because Oracle are so huge in enterprise apps, and I'm not going to disagree with that, they totally are, by virtue of the fact of 80% of those apps being out there, then Oracle are going to have to be big in the cloud, which I think is a bit of funky math at the very least. But you know what? I've got to, and I'll put it in the show notes, but I've seen, what is it? In fact, let me just pull it up quickly so I get the name right. The Gartner Magic Quadrant for May 2015 for cloud infrastructure as a service. Okay, so infrastructure as a service, fair enough, worldwide. Doesn't even have Oracle on there. It's got Amazon out there. Yeah, I know. And here's the funny thing, right? So Mark Hurd, I think, was the one that was saying that within those 10 years, it is going to be Oracle plus one other company that are running the public cloud. I'm like, wow. Really? Gartner don't
That's
even
impressive.
Have you know, we don't put a massive amount into what Gartner say. I know that, but of course, they're not like way, way, way off the ball, right? Oracle's not even on that. I mean, we've got, look, we've got CenturyLink, VMware, IBM, Rackspace, VirtuStream, CSC, Verizon, Giant, Dimension Data, but no Oracle. Yet they're going to own the cloud with Microsoft or Amazon or whoever that one other player is within 10 years. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, Mark Hurd will say anything. Always has been that way.
Do you know what, though? But you know, when you say stuff like that as a leader of an organization and a major business like Oracle, do you wonder, I mean, am I even going to be around in this position in 10 years' time? And if you're not, does that give you like carte blanche on what you can say? Because you're going
to... apparently it gives him carte blanche to say whatever he wants or whatever he thinks will help him put more money into his pockets. I mean, that was his stint at HP. That's what that was about, was lining his own pockets. That's what that guy's doing. So, yeah, he's working with his friend Larry, but Mark Hurd is just lining his own pockets, saying whatever he has to do. That's my opinion of him. It's very low. You know, what he did to HP was horrendous.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that was, like, really against the R&D and stuff like that, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know, as they say, that where all the furniture burning went on, where most of the furniture burning went on was when he was there. And it's strange, you know, when they named him, I thought he was going to be really good. So I guess I missed that one. I think in many respects he was worse than Carly.
Good grief, well. Yeah, you know, they've had a bad run of CEOs, really, haven't they? Going back even, I think you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, who was it that was before Carly? That was maybe, potentially when the rot started to set in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but let's not keep heaping it on them. He's at Oracle now. And I mean, that's the other thing about it, right? Is, you know, he's making statements like this. He clearly doesn't, you know, understand the context, understand the competition. And the fact that he's there in the position that he's in is just more reason why Oracle now has extra weight in the hold and is going to start sinking that ship too, right? Yeah. He can't be good for it, right?
From a technology perspective as well, I think just Oracle are really going to struggle to make it in the cloud. I mean, we've seen that HP have struggled and that they've made the call, potentially a ballsy call, okay, to say, you know what, it's not working for us. We're going to back out of this. We'll concentrate. We'll double down, like you say, Lauren, on the private and the hybrid cloud side of things. But what positions or what makes Oracle or what positions them better to make a success of the public cloud versus HP? And because they're very similar as organizations, aren't they? I know that Oracle have probably got more enterprise applications, right? But they're both old guard, old school, aren't they?
Are they saying that just because they're a software company, they have experience with development? I mean, but like you say, old school. It's not exactly, you know, the new wave of dev.
It's not.
It's not, and they're really great at extracting money from customers in large enterprise license agreements, and that's quite a bit up, you know, and I don't see how they're going to take that business model and make it work in cloud. I mean, Oracle is going to have to figure out, I would think, how to be a premium provider. Is there any way that Oracle can get in and compete with Amazon especially and then Microsoft secondarily at the same cost level? They're not going to be able to. I mean, this is the thing, right? This is why nobody can compete with those guys. And Google, is all three of those companies have ways to print money.
Yeah.
And they get that money from other sources, you know, or really these big, long, sustainable sources. Google does advertising. Microsoft has office. Amazon sells everything under the sun and runs their infrastructure, you know, off the rest of their sales, you know, or it's combined with the rest of their sales. You know, Oracle doesn't have a prayer to get in the same economies of scale. They're just joking if they think they can. And people don't want to pay more for the cloud. They want to pay less for the cloud. I just don't see it. I think they're clowns.
Will they be forced to? I mean, will they be able to force customers to, like, if you want this application, you're going to have to run it, you know, here or something like that?
Well, you know, what I think they will potentially do is, because I really do think that a lot of customers of Oracle are really starting to get cheesed off with the way that they've been nailed over the years on licensing. And you know what? I think you were hinting at it, Mark, that one of the big models around the cloud is that you pay for what you use. And I reckon there are a ton of Oracle customers out there that are locked into long-term licenses for stuff that they do not use. So what I wonder if they can do, to get to your question, Lauren, is maybe incentivize those customers that are already locked in, right? Let's say on a three-year enterprise-type licensing agreement and say, well, you know what? We can bring down some of those costs and we can transfer some of that licensing over to our cloud-based platforms, the same apps, but running in an Oracle cloud. And you know what? That is, in my opinion, right, the only way that I can see Oracle customers moving on. Because if you're coming towards the end of a licensing agreement, I don't see why you would want to get back into bed with Oracle, who have milked their monopoly over the years, let's be fair. And have
let's be fair.
I really do think that they have. And if I was a customer, I would not be wanting to get into bed with – I'd be looking at the cloud as a way to – break free from that kind of relationship, if you can call it that.
Here's how they do it. They buy every open source software company in the world, and they buy Docker, they buy everybody in the container space. They just buy everything that they possibly can, so you have to use their freaking cloud. That's how they do it.
Well, I mean, and it's hard to move off of Oracle, and not just from licensing perspective, but just from a technology perspective. You know, you're so ingrained into the software, I imagine it's just a daunting task to move to anything else.
And that's the one trick up the sleeve that they've got, really, haven't they? Is that it's so hard to get off their stuff. And if they do bring in their cloud-based offering of said technology, yeah, platform, Oracle, database, whatever it is, yeah, and it's going to be a bit cheaper, at least at first, maybe people would try it. I don't know. But it really feels to me like that you're almost dressing up the old technology, right, in hip new clothes, trying to, you know, well, we'll run it on the Oracle Cloud and stuff, but underneath those clothes, everything's a bit saggy still, yeah? Whoa.
Happy Halloween, you got it right.